Welcome to ArtWatch, an enlightening foray into the lives of working artists. Come on in, step into our studio, and listen to something unique about the artistic development of some of our friends. I'm your host, Elisha. It was Albert Hubbard who wrote that art is not a thing, it is a way. Our guest today is the embodiment of that ideal. A painter, poet, educator, and longtime advocate for the arts. She has inspired and empowered many to pursue a life of expression, including myself. Please welcome Suzanne Crane. Welcome to ArtWatch.
Hello.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a mixed media painter, and I work mostly with acrylics, but I've also done jewelry and sculpture and murals, a lot of other things.
And now you're also a 2021 Minnesota State Arts Award recipient. Can you tell us about the grant project that you have going on right now?
Yeah, the exhibition, which is in the gallery behind me right now, is called the Solitude Series. And it's a group of paintings that were all done during the COVID shutdown, shelter in. The show is definitely less tight than a lot of my thematic shows. It's kind of all over the place. There's some experimental elements as well.
Well, your show is a reflection in a lot of ways on how tumultuous and interesting and difficult 2020 was. Can you talk more about some of the themes in your show?
Yeah, there's themes of self-alienation, hospice, incarceration. There's mental illness and a little bit of hope for the future mixed in with a lot of grief and despair. So it's definitely not my usual because I'm known for doing artwork that's sort of vibrant, positive, dreamlike, and usually I'm working with mythological themes, but this one is just right out there. And it's still a little bit raw for me because all of these paintings have been done in the last 6 months or less. I still have a hard time talking about them or even knowing exactly what they're going to mean in the future. You know, I haven't had any time to look away from them and then come back and say, oh yeah, okay, I know what I was thinking about. Some of them are open, pretty open to poetic interpretation.
So you mentioned your usual work, which is quite often vibrant colors, lots of symbolism, fluid shapes, an avoidance of grayscale. But I know that you weren't always a painter. How did you find your art?
There's so many different ways I could answer that. But I'll say that I became captivated by trying to express feelings on paper when I was a small child and went to Germany when I was just turning 7. So I had my birthday in Germany with the relatives. And my Uncle Rudy bought me some art supplies. And it kept me busy, and I became kind of obsessed with it. And I started keeping a journal of that trip, and I think my mom still has it. So at the age of 7, I really got serious about trying to put down, you know, what I felt my life was about, what was going on around me. And I do remember that I spent a ton of time on a drawing of my braid getting stuck in the swing set. And I was sort of hanging from it and crying until somebody came and liberated me from that. And so I know that it was just this dramatic picture with my eyes, you know, crying like a waterfall and my hair stuck up there. And I'm sure that if I looked at it today, it would just be amusing, but I was trying to capture the trauma of that event, and I always did artwork that had some sort of meaning, personal meaning.
So you can trace your interest in visual art back to this 7-year-old visual journal that you kept. Mm-hmm. But I also know that you've done sculpture work, interested in art and metals for a while. Can you tell us more about that journey to actually becoming a painter?
It's kind of funny, actually, because I liked sculpture better and I always really liked architecture. And I thought I might become an architect at one point. Had some early successes, like I won a poster contest when I was in middle school. And then in high school, I entered my first painting into some kind of art competition and I got a blue ribbon. And those were really the only times I'd ever entered anything with my artwork. And both times I won. And with the poster contest, I won $100, which to me was like $1 million, you know. And I was trying to think of like where I was going to spend all this money.
Can I ask about what the winning poster was?
Oh, the winning poster was kind of cheesy. I still remember it. I painted the front of our school with the American flag flying and then our principal standing there and my favorite teacher and then me just standing there waving and smiling. And I think it was sort of a youthful piece of propaganda because I thought that my friend Brian was a better artist, except he didn't have the principal and the American flag in his. So I kind of felt I won that illegitimately. So yeah, I got into sculpture and art metals and color studies and I liked it all, really. And I like to teach art too. I've taught adults and I've taught children and I started my own gifted and talented program after school. And so, my whole life, everything about my life is about the arts.
Yeah, well, as Albert Hubbard said, art is not a thing. It is a way. And I think
it is for me for sure.
And I can see that in your life that you've really exemplified mm-hmm. that. Can you talk more about your teaching?
I became a teacher accidentally, and I've been teaching for over 30 years now. And I started with just wanting to get out of the house and wanting to live in the woods. And there was a job opening for a Girl Scout counselor at Camp Ehowie in Wisconsin. And I thought, yeah, I could do this. I just live in the woods, hear the birds in the morning, and canoe and, get paid for canoeing around and doing archery and things like that. And the funny thing is that first teaching stint had nothing to do with art. And I was still going to college and not connecting the dots, not thinking, I should be a teacher. This would be a good thing. This works. Then I went to Minneapolis and got connected with the Southwest Super Summer Program. You know, I thought it would be kind of a transient thing because I like to have different jobs and experiment with, what can I do? What can I do well? 30 years later, I'm still there. I helped develop the art department into something a lot bigger than it was. And I love the kids and it's very fun. And I just run into kids all the time when I'm in Minneapolis that I've talked.
This is something that I've witnessed myself. You and I have been somewhere and a car will pull up and the window will roll down and they'll say, "Hey, are you Susie? Are you Susie Crane? Did you teach art lessons when I was 5 years old?" And, I think a lot of people would describe you as their first believer, but who are your first believers in your artwork?
Well, my first believer, it would be my siblings, my classmates, my teachers. I'm lucky I had a lot of people telling me that what I was doing was good or above board. And I always felt supported that way, except when I wanted to make it into a career. Then, there was this, like, art's not a career. It's a hobby. And I come from farmers and laborers, so the idea that somebody would make a living doing something fun is just not... it's not a thing. So my dad actually said to me that I'll make money in art when pigs fly. And so I remember my first art fair that I entered and got into. I did all these flying pigs out of Sculpey. So just this whole tree full of flying pigs. And I must have made somewhere between 60 and 80 different colored pigs with designs on them and different colored wings and metalwork. And I, you know, would put a little gleam in their eye with a little bit of fingernail polish and, you know, things like that. I just used all these different mixed media elements of sculpture and painting and then made the hooks. And I sold out. Like, I think I went home with, after all my expenses, I think I made like somewhere between $1,000 and $1,200 in a day. And I thought, this is really neat. You know, like, I like this. So that's when I started the Art Underground in Minneapolis. And that was it was a gallery for emerging artists and kind of avant-garde stuff. So one show was on the ceiling. You had to, like, lay on mats on the floor and look at the artwork on the ceiling. And one show was all artistically modified Barbie dolls. And one show was all recycled stuff, and most of it was out of the Mississippi. And it was beautiful. Like, it was a great show. Some of the shows that I had in Minneapolis I don't think could be duplicated in southeastern Minnesota in the rural territory because I think they were just too weird. But it did get the gallery some attention, and we did get in the paper a lot and get some TV attention as well. So it was fun.
You've been making artwork for most of your life, have been working professionally for over 3 decades, have pieces and collections all over the world. What stands out to you as your favorite moment?
Oh my, there's several, really. There's certain paintings that I've painted where it just felt like a eureka moment where I just knew this was really something, like with Arches or the subway tunnel. I've had a couple of shows sell out, which was really wonderful. Having a famous artist invite me to go to China is a big one. Dee Teller had me go to China with her as her assistant. That was unbelievable. I guess I'd have to say that right now, the State Arts Board grant, that feels good. That feels really good.
You've made a living off of your artwork for 35 years. Do you have any advice to working artists who are trying to make their art their living?
Definitely develop something that you do well and really work at it. But also, I can't say enough about collaboration and networking, that you can't just create in a void. You could be doing the best stuff. Somehow you need to connect what you're doing to something that matters.
What are you excited for about the future?
Well, I think that people are realizing that art has such a powerful therapeutic effect that we need to have more of it, and we need to pay attention to the makers and make sure that they can live, you know, well, live healthy. For myself, I always have grandiose plans. I always want to go as far as I can. I'd like to be shown at the Whitney, where they show only American artists who are living. And I'd like to be in collections. I'd like to have in the future a big bump in the value of my work so that the people who have supported me all along can go, hey, this is very valuable now. I'm really glad I bought when I did. And I'd like to keep creating for many years. I don't ever want to stop.
For those who want to see more of your artwork, where should they go?
Well, they should go to the Fribourne County Arts Initiative, visit my studio that's in the same building, go to my website, which is www.suzannecrane.com, and the Suzanne is with an S, not a Z, the German way, not the French way, even though the French way is pretty cool.
Thank you for being on Art Watch.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for listening to Art Watch. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts,
leaving a tip at leaveatip.org, or if you can, support the production with a small monthly donation. Information on this, links to Suzanne Crane's work, as well as the video version of this podcast, can be found at artwatch.us. A very special thanks to this episode's sponsor, the Fribourne County Arts Initiative. Located in the historic Bessesen Former Opera Palace in Albert Lea, Minnesota, the FCAI is an arts nonprofit that offers a wide range of programming, from visual arts to virtual open mic nights. Visit them online at www.fcai.us. This show was also made possible with generous support from the Minnesota State Arts Board, the Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council, and Fribourne-Maurer Cooperative Services. We're flipping the script with the next episode. I'm excited about it. Hope you can join us. Until then, take care.